It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers. It is time once again to come out of your closets and to start living and being truthfully who you are. And today, I'm just really over the heaviness of coming out. Well, kind of, sort of. I'm still heavy by myself, but I'm really over this heaviness stuff. And I want to have some fun today because I think there's a beautiful, wonderful, fun side of coming out. There's humor we can find in the experience. And it's also the 100th episode of the Coming Out Lounge. And as I was thinking yeah, I know. And my guest is like right here, ready to roll. It is a landmark.
Oh, our load.
Yes.
Our load is a heavy one.
Our load is a heavy one. Absolutely. Baby. So to have fun and humor, I thought, who better than Mr. Bruce Valanche? Yes, the comedian, Mr. Emmy Award winner, Mr. Musical Guy. Sometimes he plays a woman, sometimes he plays himself. I thought he would be a beautiful, wonderful, awesome guy to have on the 100th episode. So welcome, Bruce. How are you?
I'm fine. It's talking about coming out. It's like I'm being your authentic, true self. I feel like Angelica Houston in The Witches. You know, she closes, they lock the door and they say, take off your shoes.
Right, exactly.
And they all reveal themselves to be crones of the highest order. So that may be, you know, that may be who your authentic self is. That's maybe who my authentic self is. I live in shriek of terror of who my authentic self is.
I know, we all do. You know, I wake up and I go, this morning I'm laying in bed thinking, okay, today's like a huge podcast day. You know, I'm doing the 100th episode and getting some others recorded. I'm like, who do I want to be today? And I'm like, no, just be yourself. I'm like, well, what the f*** does that mean sometimes, you know? So, Mr. Valanche, you're doing some pretty cool stuff, I hear.
Sitting in the middle of the Connecticut woods, trying out a new musical.
Awesome.
I've written a musical for all of Petula Clark's songs. It's called The Sign of the Times. We are premiering it at the Goodspeed Opera House outside New Haven, where they incubate musicals. So we're now in rehearsal. We start July 29th, and we unveil it for an audience, and they get to see the authentic true self. But so far, we're having a great time, and it's absolutely gorgeous up here.
Awesome.
You know, I mean, I live in Southern California. There's a concept, something called humidity I've never heard of.
Right.
Which, whenever I come back here, because I'm from Jersey, I come back here and I go, why does it remind me of, oh, it's the humidity, that's why.
And that's
kind of... Today's actually kind of a light, humid day.
Yeah.
So
that's got to play havoc with your hair.
God knows, something has to play with my hair.
Well...
Yeah, it used to be curly. It used to
be.
I mean, I have a lot of it, and I'm proud at my advanced age that I have a lot of hair. But it used to be really curly, and then something happened. Probably medication changed everything, and it went from being very curly to being so straight that people say, "Oh, you've had that Japanese hair straightening thing done." You know, it sounds like an orgasm, doesn't it? I had Japanese hair straightening. But it,
Say that 10 times.
No, it's just kind of, you know, the body chemistry changed the way they keep telling you it's supposed to do. You know, every 7 years you discover you're allergic to macadamia nuts.
Right.
Or something. And so, you know, I come here and it's like there'll be days where suddenly I'll say, gee, my old hair came back for a little visit, a conjugal visit.
Right. Exactly. That's funny. Well, maybe that's what happened to me is all the medication, my hair finally started falling out. So there's not much there. There's no curl.
There.
There's not, yeah, I'm one of those shiny, bald-headed guys. You know, they call me Yul Brynner.
That's so hot. I'm so afraid of what's under this. I admire anybody who can maintain, you know, the chrome dome.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling that what I have under here ain't pretty, and I don't want to know about it, so.
Speaking of what's under there that ain't pretty, I think that's a good segue into how many of us feel when we're hiding in that closet. Whoa, what's underneath? This is so ugly, you know? But I don't know, you and I, you know, I know you're a funny guy. I've seen you a couple of times. We were talking before we came on the show about you being in Hairspray, and that's where I saw you last when you were in L.A., but I think sometimes we as LGBTQ and IATs, whatever all the rest of the alphabet we now have on our lovely LGBT community, I think we tend to forget.
A Scrabble set.
Hey, that's a great, that's a great idea.
Yeah. I'm on the board of the LGBT Center, the Los Angeles LGBT Center, which has gone through 7 name changes in the 20 years I've been on the board. And currently we are the Los Angeles LGBT Center. I keep saying, look at it, it's approaching Scrabble length. Soon they'll be able to hit triple word score and have to change the name again.
Oh, my God. So let's talk about that stuff that we think is so heavy, but yet there's got to be humor in Coming Out. That's my theory. I think there's a lot of humorous places along the Coming Out journey, and I'm curious, what's the funny thing that's happened to you as an out gay comedian? I know that's a loaded question.
Well, I was out and gay before I was a comedian, so it wasn't a part of the experience.
Right.
I was just always, I am so old that the concept of coming out did not exist when I might have actually come out. That happened after Stonewall,
right?
And I was around for Stonewall, and I was already, established in my field. I was a journalist in those days, but I was also an actor. I was a child actor, and then I became an actor. But I was a performer, but there was never any question, and I never made any effort to conceal it. I had a very complicated adolescence where I had women and I had men, and all the way through college, and then I finally said, I love women, but no woman deserves to have a guy skulking off to the Greyhound station every night.
Right.
I decided I wasn't going to do that anymore, and actually, it wasn't a hard decision because I wanted men more than I wanted women, so that was easy. But the idea of actually declaring yourself, I always did. I mean, there was never any question about in my family or my coworkers or anything like that. So I kind of, I don't know if I either dodged that bullet or the bullet wasn't being fired at the time. But later on, when people actually had the option of coming out, they could do it joyously,
mm-hmm.
Or they could do it like Jodie Foster.
Right.
I mean, I never saw anybody so tortured in my life. And I know her, and she's a lovely person.
Mm-hmm.
And in her real life, she's not nearly that tortured. I mean, she put herself through this whole thing rather than just kind of get up and say, oh, by the way, I'm gay and I'm happy, which is all anybody wants to hear. I mean, nobody wants to hear the other stuff. And it's kind of narcissistic to get up there and describe your torturous path to reality. But on the other hand, what great actor isn't narcissistic? So
right. Bruce, I think you brought up something that's really powerful for the listeners here is a lot of times it is how we approach this. It's how you step into this. If you step into it being, and we'll use Jody as an example, being tortured and, all this stuff around it, then that's kind of how you set the tone for the coming out. And I've done this with my clients. I'm like, the way you approach this is exactly the way people are going to react to it. If you approach it as, this is who I am, it's going to make it a lot easier, and I know it's not always going to happen that way, but it's going to make it a lot harder for someone to go, well, you're a jerk, you shouldn't be doing that, da-da-da, because you're kind of like, this is just who I am, so that's the way it is.
It's become much easier with time, and I think a lot is made of, big names, because that culture that we're in is we want to see what the big names do. But the big names have other agendas that the people in the world have. I mean, I always say the most important thing anybody can do is come out, but I was in an area where flamboyance, eccentricity, and individualism were prized.
Right.
So it was just another one of those things that people would say about me. But my admiration goes to school teachers and cost accountants and people in the Army who were not in a field that encouraged them to be real and true about themselves, and chose to do it anyway just because they didn't want to live with themselves without that authenticity.
Yeah.
That was a much braver thing to do. I mean, when marriage is legal all over the United States, of course, it makes it easier to back into coming out, if that's the visual I want to put out there.
Right, exactly. It's very true, because I have to tell you, Bruce, I've been doing this work now for since 2009, so we were pre all the marriage rights happening. And every time, and I remember the very first one, when Massachusetts went, then Iowa followed it, when those things happened, I started getting very busy as a coming out coach, because I could sense that people were like, oh, okay, this is kind of a sign that it's okay. We can move forward now. And then throughout the years, as other states started to embrace, the same thing would happen. I'd get a surge. I'd get a surge of inquiries. I'd get a surge of, people coming out. I get a surge of guys hitting me up going, wow, you're a really handsome guy. You'd be a great coach. Of course, those were all marriage proposals coming across, but I could say, sorry, I'm taking boys. But anyway, it was one of those things. Now I think it's the new frontier of, okay, we've got some acceptance going on. We've got some movement going forward. Now it's like, okay, what is the frontier to break? And I think for our transgender brothers and sisters, that's the big frontier. But I think oftentimes we forget there's still tons of places across our beautiful planet where it ain't cool to be gay. That's the bigger fight.
God knows.
Yeah, exactly. So as you have gone through your world, you know, being a comedian, doing the Hollywood stuff, being actor, producer, writer, all that sort of stuff, what is the most painful thing for the, quote, entertainment industry to just still be in the closet? Because I still see so many people in the closet that are in that industry.
Well, ironically, I think there are two places, the top and the bottom. At the top, certainly, the last bastion will be the male action hero.
Right.
Who everybody knows who is out.
Right.
And kisses the girl.
Mm.
In the way it's supposed to be, the actors don't bring their personal persona into the role, but we know that that's not the case for a lot of the audience. On the other hand, we don't really know how the audience will respond, and a lot of people don't want to gamble with their dollars to find out.
Right. Well, I mean, just look at what's going on with Disney and... Yeah, with Disney and, you know, Frozen, and then I think now we've got Star Trek with the gay character. I mean, you can kind of see this stuff is starting to unfold.
It's a character, but it's a subordinate character, right. And it's not a romantic character.
Yeah.
I mean, if Matt Bomer were to have done 50 Shades of Grey, mm-hmm. which was in the cards, but didn't work out because of scheduling, literally. I mean, it wasn't because they didn't want him. They did want him, and the fans wanted him. Certainly nobody knew the guy who they cast.
Right.
But the point is, if you could cast somebody who was openly gay and kisses the girl in the case of 50 Shades of Grey, does a whole lot more to her than kiss her.
Right.
I mean, he whips her, for Christ's sake.
Right.
But this is a whole issue.
Right.
But that has to happen. You know, we haven't had an out James Bond or an out any of those action guys. And that's, on the other hand, there is not a big out baseball hero, football hero, basketball hero, hockey hero either.
Right.
So, you know, when that bridge is crossed, I think all the bridges will be crossed. And as I was saying before, that's at the top of showbiz. At the bottom, you have the guy who drives the truck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the American Horror Story set, which is, of course, a very gay-friendly set.
Right.
But, and I'm just making him up. But he could be a closeted gay guy who doesn't want to come out because he's surrounded by homophobic teamsters.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's a gay-friendly set doesn't mean that that trickles down to what we call below the line, which is the non-creative elements of the show, writing, directing, designing.
Right.
The ones who actually execute that stuff are by and large straight. And, not necessarily receptive to people who aren't. Of course, they aren't receptive to people who aren't in the union or related to other people anyway, but that's, you know, that's also another story. But when you go on those sets, actually, and you'll find some, strangely enough, you'll find some very tough lesbians who really do fit the stereotype because they fit in a long time ago. You know,
yep.
They never really came out, but they just lived their own lives. Everybody figured out this is who they are. And so the industry is filled with women like that. But I don't know if they've actually, at this point, probably they have come out because we're talking about show business in the U.S. But I think that traditionally, at the worker bee level, it was mm-hmm. difficult. I know the costume and hair departments were always like, looked upon with the gimlet eyes by the guys who were hammering and, you know,
sure.
and banging.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, it's kind of interesting. I just came back from a podcasting conference and, you know, podcasters are kind of like pushing the envelopes because everything on podcasts is being talked about. You know, we've got people talking about sex. We've got people talking about war, guns. All, so it's like open territory. Anything can be talked about on a podcast. Yet, as I would talk to people and say, oh, yeah, my podcast is The Coming Out Lounge, I'd get the proverbial, oh, that's good. You're doing some really good in the world. And then they were off, almost like they didn't know what to do with talking to this gay guy about what he's talking about. And it was almost like I could feel, and this is my own assumption bullshit showing up, but I could almost feel the like,
right.
Okay, so he's gay. That's nice. He's doing this. I need to move on because I still think there's a discomfort for a lot of people when they start to, quote, meet us, you know, because suddenly we become real out there in the world, even though
right.
we're all out there. We're all there. Yeah. Do you think a lot of in the industry, it is that kind of we know it's there, but we don't want to talk about it still in the industry?
Yeah, I do. I think that still exists. I think it goes to more basic right of privacy. If people say, well, it's his business, it's not my business,
sure.
and I don't want to get into his business. I think as with visibility, it's there less than it was, because that's the great gift of coming out. It's about visibility. The only way we are ever going to get and maintain our civil rights is to be visible. You know, right. People say to me sometimes, where'd you all come from? It's like the mothership landed all right. of a sudden.
Because
people realize that they're never going to get what they want by being in the closet. The difference between our civil rights movement and the black civil rights movement is that they don't have a closet to be in. When we admit to who we are, we let our authentic selves emerge, then people say, oh, well, of course you have the right to do this. The whole marriage equality movement started because people could not get into a hospital bed or get next to their loved one in the hospital bed and take care of this person they've been with for years, because legally there was no coverage for us.
Yeah.
And that's how it started. It didn't start because we all decided we had to rush to Vera Wang and get a dress.
Right.
It started because we're not allowed to take care of our loved ones.
Yeah.
And they were turned over to a family which had in so many cases rejected them.
Mm-hmm. And see, I think those are the stories.
It was a serious bid for basic civil rights. It was not some sort of like, ooh, let's pervert the world.
Right. Right. Well, I think that, yeah, exactly. I think that's where a lot of the fight got really misrepresented. It's like, okay, let's take this down to a right. This is just a simple, basic right. Let's not turn this into, oh, yeah, well, you know, we're going to take over the world and then there won't be any population because, well, let's see, guys and guys, girls and girls, quote, can't make babies. It's like, no, right. This is about, let's be real about what's being human, what's being like treating each other with dignity and respect. And as I went through that phase, along with everyone else in the world, I was actually working on a side business where I was developing, you know, a listing service for gay wedding stuff. You could be a photographer, you know, florist, all that sort of stuff. And I found it really interesting to be going through this because many of my, and I love all my gay brothers and sisters, but this is where I'll get myself in some deep water. I kept thinking, why are we making this all about the wedding? It's about rights. But yet, we all, as you said, we all were rushing off to get the dresses and stuff. And
right.
I think it's...
So the wedding is symbolic.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we've been designing so many weddings for so many straight people over the centuries that it was like, ooh, the idea we could do it for ourselves. We got smitten.
Yeah, exactly. We did get smitten. So let's talk about, I know you got a new book you're working on, and so let's talk a little bit about that. We've already talked about your new play, but what's going on with the book?
Well, it's on hold until we get this thing up, but hopefully it'll be done by the end of the year. It's you know, a book about what I've done. I would like to make it like a David Sedaris book, filled with, if you know the stuff, I mean, essays and some autobiographical and some fictional, and just make it different, because everybody's writing a book. And then we went to Hartford and we did,
I
want it to be like that.
Right, that's awesome.
But they want behind the scenes, and when I do my one-man extravaganza, I do a lot of stuff about behind the scenes, a lot of stories about behind the scenes of the Oscars, because I've written 23 of those.
Right.
So that will certainly be in there. And my fear is that, you know, I really can't do a book about the sex.
Right.
I can't imagine anybody wants to read that. But Marlene Dietrich wrote a book. She got a lot of money from a publisher, and she wrote a book, and she wouldn't put any sex in it.
Mm.
They said, we can't publish this because there's no sex. She gave them the money back.
Wow.
But Marlene Dietrich, you know, I mean, because I mean, she was a sex goddess, for her sake.
Exactly.
Or for God's sake, or whoever you like. And then she didn't want to write about sex. But Marlene Dietrich didn't want to write about people who had sex. And then I'm friendly with her grandson. He said, well, that was an early edition. Later on, she couldn't shut up about the people she had sex.
But I think that's part of what could be part of...
But it still never got published. She
exactly. But I think that's also another groundbreaking arena for us as LGBTQ people, is to start talking about this sex stuff in a way that the quote-unquote heterosexual community can really embrace it. I know when my book came out, one of the things that shocked me the most was when I started getting some of my heterosexual friends who were giving me feedback on it, saying, wow, this book about coming out really hit me in my own world of how much I didn't accept myself through my sexual stuff as a teen, young adult, even now. And I found that really fascinating. It's like, wow, kind of felt like you, because I did push the envelope. There's quite a bit of sex in my book. But what it ended up doing was educating people on, okay, this isn't just about sex with the gay community. Wow, this guy really had heart. He had some stuff he wanted, you know, to do. So awesome. I love that about the book. So I have an interesting little quirky question, just because, you know, here we are in the lovely political circus that we want to call election year. And I'm just curious, if a cabinet position were created specifically for someone in our community to sit on, let's just say it was you. Let's just say a cabinet position was created for you, Bruce, to sit on, to have an impact in our political world. What would you do? What would be the thing you'd really want to do in that seat besides sit?
Such get laid.
Yeah.
Such have a Marine Corps detail to betray me.
Exactly. Hello. Thank you. Right. Exactly.
Like, man, the last time I saw Nancy Reagan, she was having lunch at the Ivy in Beverly Hills, and she had her Marines with her.
Awesome.
And I thought that's the way to go into a big old retirement.
Absolutely.
Surrounded by Marines.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's some sort of gay cabinet.
Yeah. I don't know. I just almost feels like, what if there was a gay cabinet post? What would be the thing that we could, you know, someone like you or me or anyone?
You would probably have to address yourself to what they've always called the homosexual agenda.
Exactly.
Which, you know, I left my copy in a cab years ago, so I'm never sure exactly what's on it anymore. But clearly it would be about pressing for civil rights. It would be a way to coalesce all of those organizations. Our interest is in civil rights. And again, I mean, we've moved into the trans area now, and so it would certainly encompass that. It would be dealing with insurance companies on the AIDS issue and dealing with the scientific community on the AIDS issue. It would be touching all of those things that are a part of our life. I mean, the fact that this position could exist means the world would have changed
exactly
a bit.
Yeah.
And whoever is in the executive branch would have managed to conquer the special interests who would say, why them? Why not us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why not a secretary of white trash?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you're breaking down societal components, you know.
But I love that.
Gay people and black people, and I mean, then, you know, it would be like opening the floodgates, so that could even exist. Probably the first thing I would do is say I'm the wrong person for this job, and I would get somebody like Lori Jean, who runs the LA Gay and Lesbian Center and is incredible, a dynamo, you know, and is not tainted by the Washington scene. She ran the task force in Washington for 2 years, and then she left and came back to the center, because I think she's the spirit of Washington, and so I think it would have to be somebody who's not like, much as I like Chad Griffin, I mean, he's not an HRC person, but somebody who, although there's always an argument for having somebody who's on the Washington scene representing your interests, but then they do weird things, you know.
Right, exactly.
And HRC will do something like, instead of supporting the gay candidate, they will support the incumbent who they maintain is gay friendly.
Mm-hmm.
They say they don't want to sell down the river. Well, you know, who are they selling down the river? I mean, the idea is we have to grow our own.
Mm-hmm.
This ability must be in the legislative branch as well as on the street. You know, we need more Tammy Baldwins.
Right. And I think this is where we miss it often in our own community, is growing our own. We don't.
To see HRC say, well, no, we're going to throw in with the incumbent because we've had it to dinner.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, kind of crazy. Even the incumbent would think, that's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. Instead of supporting your own, absolutely. And I love how you answered this question, and I wanted to ask it specifically because I kind of had a gut feeling you would go to the heart of, it's still all about just rights, simple human rights. That's the basis. When we can take the sex out of it, which I know that kind of gets boring when there's no sex, but take the sex out of it and just put the human in it.
So the smartest thing is to be real, you know. I mean, there's a commercial which I think is finally, I don't know if this is the commercial that's going to be on during Trump's acceptance speech. There's a coalition that's put together some commercials about the bathroom issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I thought that they should use was just pictures of all of these guys saying, these are the people who will be with your daughter in the ladies' room
if
this legislation passed.
Yep.
Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Because that's who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that may be a little, I think what they're going to show is an actual dramatization of trans woman being directed to the men's room.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to show it on the night of Trump's acceptance. Apparently, they actually bought the time.
Wow.
Now, of course, the RNC is going to turn around and say they can't now that it's been announced.
Sure, exactly.
I think that's why they announced it, because they didn't figure they'd make it all the way to the finish line.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. But no, I mean, this is the key core issues here, you know, and this is where, you know, we get a little more serious in this conversation, is the core issues are still about humanity, plain and simple. Being human, caring about each other, realizing we're more alike than we are different, and that's the bottom line. So I have one last question for you before we wrap it up here, sir. Oh, yeah, baby. You've been around. You've been through a lot of this stuff. But a lot of the listeners, this is listened to all over the world. I mean, we have a huge following in Asia Pacific.
Oh, really? And the answer is 11 inches, and I have to figure that out in years.
Yeah. So if you could give somebody a piece of advice coming out, what would it be? With all the experience you've had in this world so far, what would it be?
If you are having trouble doing this, look around you and find your natural allies. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
Find the people and tell them first. Yeah. And use them as support as your circle gets wider of people who you are telling.
Yeah.
But don't go into the thing alone. You don't have to go into it alone. You may feel like you're alone, but in reality, you're not. First, you test the waters around you, and you'll discover that there are friends there, and they will help you.
Yeah.
And if you really find that there's nobody close to you, there are numbers you can call, and you will make instant friends who will help you out.
There's so many beautiful support organizations out there, and a lot of them truly are a phone call away. I mean, even if you're in the middle of the U.S., in a little town, in the middle of nowhere, and you feel like, oh my gosh, I don't have any support. Well, you do.
Not only that, they will show you how to educate your family and your friends
Absolutely.
And your coworkers.
Absolutely.
So you don't have to figure it out on your own.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything on your own.
Absolutely.
We are a movement.
We are a movement. And I think sometimes we forget that this is a movement. This is about being human and each of us taking part in this movement. And however you can. I mean, for some people, they're like, oh, I can't do this. You can. All you have to do is just be yourself your way. That's part of being in the movement.
The LA LGBT Center.
Yep, exactly.
Because there are people there on the phone 24/7 who are taking these situations and making them work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, funny man, Mr. Bruce Valanche, I want to say I really appreciate you taking time out of your production schedule and the musical and everything to come and be on the Coming Out Lounge and helping us celebrate the 100th episode. I truly appreciate you, my friend.
My friend. I'm thrilled to be the 100th year boy.
Hey, thank you, sir. And good luck with everything. Looking forward to hopefully seeing the musical sweep the Broadway scene in a couple of years. All right, my friend. I truly appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And there you have it, the 100th episode of the Coming Out Lounge. I know I had fun. I really want to say thank you to Mr. Bruce Valanche for being so energetic, humorous, fun, all those big, beautiful words that describe how happy he's made me feel on the 100th episode of the Coming Out Lounge. And I want to say thank you to you, the listeners, as well, because you've made this happen. You've helped us be heard and seen and downloaded in over 50 countries across the globe. And you come and you show up each week with yourselves, your true selves, and take in the messages that we're sending. And because of you, we've made a beautiful decision. We're going to start offering the Coming Out Lounge twice a week, starting this week. Some of those episodes will just be me delivering short messages of how to step into your authentic self and how do you face certain challenges when you decide to be who you're meant to be in the world. Some of it's going to be oriented towards the LGBTQ community, and other messages are going to be good for anyone. In fact, we're going to start telling more and more stories about people coming out in all aspects of lives. It could be someone coming out of cancer survivor. It could be someone who's come out of a traumatic brain injury. It could be someone who's actually coming out of a really, really bad relationship. We're going to go to the bigger, broader world because we believe here at the Coming Out Lounge that everybody's got a coming out story. So it's because of you, our listeners, our followers, that we have been able to take the bigger step and take that big leap of faith that we have something to say that is worth saying more than just once a week. So starting on September the 9th, you will get a second episode of the Coming Out Lounge. And with that, as I always do, I'm going to say, never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach and the host of the Coming Out Lounge, and we're going to catch you not just in a week, but just in another couple of days from now. Thanks for listening, and have a beautiful day. Hey, 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 closet dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to ask you a question. If you could take stress out of your journey, be more content in who you are, and find ways to do some of the most difficult things that you need to do as you come through the closet doors, would you do it? I bet the answer is yes. Why do I know this? Because I have been getting requests from listeners and clients or prospective clients about finding ways to just address certain things in their coming out journey. Some people don't want to work for a long time, and I totally get that. And that's why I've designed some brand new coming out coaching one-on-one sessions. These are very focused, topic-specific sessions. For example, maybe you're looking at coming out midlife and how do you do it? Could be that you're already out, but you're not completely out and you want to talk about how do I do this and come out at work. Could be that you're having trouble even accepting yourself as a gay person. And might there be a possibility that you're really struggling with your sexuality and your religion? Depending on what you're looking for, I've designed 9 powerful, highly focused one-on-one laser coaching sessions that you can choose from. Each session goes for 90 minutes. We stay specifically focused on the topic at hand. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So now that you've heard about this, how would you like to go check them out? Well, here's how you do this. Go to thecomingoutcoach.com. On that page, you can scroll down. You'll see stuff for the book and for some other offerings, but then you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, and it will take you to a page that describes each of the 9 offerings that I have. If you happen to be listening to the podcast right now, just look over to the right-hand side of the show page, and you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions right there. Again, just click on that button and go check out these new offerings. So, what do you think? Isn't it about time that you stepped out, you stepped up, and you stepped into resolving whatever the biggest issue is in your coming out journey? I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and I can't wait to work with you one-on-one.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.